prevention of marijuana cultivation and environmental mitigation on public land, 7th of the 8 federal priorities. And this is generally addressed by establishing and enforcing cannabis waste management protocols, water use regulations, implementing restrictions on the use of certain pesticides, and putting in SOPs that implement best practices for chemical storage and other environmental concerns. The 8th of the 8 federal priorities is prevention of marijuana on federal property. Federal property does not mean Indian trust property. What that means is like BLM land or national parks, things like that. It's a pretty easy element.
The speaker's audio was buffering out at this point. We were able to confirm it was on his end, as we were able to transmit and receive at a normal rate. As a result, the audio breaking up was part of the presentation.
Federal guidelines to comply with. Can the a sovereign create intertribal commerce? Well, tribal governments are really unique because of their direct relationship to their membership. And because of this, a tribal government, including HOOPA, can cater tribal law to the goals and needs of its members in a way that state governments just simply can't do. I think that HOOPA, to be successful in the tribal cannabis space, needs to create a regulatory framework that, number one, preserves what makes HOOPA cannabis special, right? Sun-grown craft cannabis. That's something that I feel for economic success. In doing so, you know, it needs to be mindful of a couple of things. Number one, be mindful not to over-regulate small craft cannabis producers, as has been the case in California. Anybody who's familiar with the cannabis space in the state of California knows that they don't do a great job of distinguishing between small craft growers and large industrial growers. But HOOPA will also need to create a regulatory structure that does allow for scalability. Medium and larger sized operations do require more detailed and stringent regulations because of the increased potential harms that are identified by the Department of Justice. HOOPA also has the ability to more directly create positive impact through that member needs in ways that state governments just really can't do, again, because of the size of state governments. And I'll give you a couple of examples here. Tribal governments have a unique ability to create like a central distribution hub that can streamline transportation to other tribes, which I think would be something of great value to smaller growers. It can also create like a government-owned retail dispensary where members can directly and frankly more easily. I also want to emphasize something here. Understand that cannabis, at least for me, it's not the goal. The real goal is to create like a broad-based sovereign economy using cannabis as just one small piece. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. Santa Bell has been like a springboard to other achievements. You know, the funds from cannabis were used for them to develop a thriving online lending business. It also was used to build a highly profitable convenience store and fuel station. Those are things that they would have had to try to have gotten grants or probably enter into very high interest loans. They didn't have to do that. They were able to pay for these things largely out of their own pocket. It's also supported exploration to other economic components of a true reservation economy. Right now, we're looking at solar energy development as well as 8A contracting. And cannabis funds are what are being used to fuel these future projects, both ones that are built and thrive in others that are on the horizon. All clubs be considered as well. What does a people's vote to legalize and regulate cannabis mean? People of many jurisdictions have exercised their democratic right to legalize cannabis in some form, but very few people are voting to legalize cannabis without any regulation or any controls placed on that activity. You know, generally, people want their governments to proceed in a thoughtful and systematic way. My understanding is that the HOOPA people voted to legalize cannabis, and in particular, commercial cannabis operations. I see the job of the Hoopa tribal government to now create a regulatory framework that allows for these activities in a manner that is safe and secure, but also that is mindful of the reservation's immediate goals and sets a foundation for long-term scalability. Questions?
Thanks, Keith. Appreciate the presentation. Did anybody out there have any questions on the presentation or questions for the Tribal Council? Sure, come on up, Darcy.
Okay, so this presentation was great. So am I to understand that the Hoopa tribe is moving to have a tribal government selling cannabis to other areas?
No, the tribal government and the tribal council aren't interested in entering into the cannabis or a dispensary or producing our own and selling it. This is primarily for the purpose of establishing regulations for individual small business owners who want to participate in the industry.
Okay. So how is this going to benefit the tribe as a whole?
I mean, if you look at the economic benefit that comes from an individual who participates in legal cannabis, I mean, I think that would go a long ways towards helping their family. You know, it would go a long ways towards providing some economic benefit, you know, jobs or opportunities that the tribe doesn't currently offer.
Okay. So with all of the information that we just received, it sounded like it was more like the tribal government was going to, the tribe itself was going to move into doing the cannabis. And now you're telling me it would be just for individuals that are currently doing cannabis now, correct?
Yeah. I think that the tribal council recognizes that, you know, the current enterprises that we have are we're having a hell of enough time, hard enough time, you know, managing those to a level that I think the expectation is of the membership. You know, when we started to talk about the proposing of regulations, creating ordinance, it was never around the tribal council or the tribal government participating in the industry at all. It's just creating a legal mechanism through a regulation or an ordinance to be able to allow for individual farmers who are already participating or trying to participate in the legal cannabis industry in Indian Country in California to be able to participate.
Okay, so in some of the regulations that he explained that needs to be created by the tribal government, we're going to be using tribal dollars or some type of funding that should be for the whole tribe. So how are we supposed to regroup that, get that money back if we are to have this going on for certain individuals and we have to regulate and we have to make sure, you know, we have this, what did they call it, regulation board or committee or whatever. How is that going to benefit the tribe as a whole? I mean, how are we going to get the money back that the tribe's going to have to spend for that?
Yeah, I don't think that we've gone into, like, fee schedules as far as, you know, right now you pay a certain amount of money to actually participate by buying a license. You know, what we're looking at, I think, is, like, these different... There's individual use, the kind of recreational use for somebody who wants to just grow maybe a small amount of plants, and then you're getting into like commercial scale operations. And I think at that point is when you start to develop maybe some fees that will go along with you know, participation on that level, in recognition of needing, you know, at some point, if it's, you know, say TIPA, for instance, has to perform some kind of a, you know, go onto your property and take a look at the way that your operation is running. Obviously, you know, we're going to need to have some kind of a...
So that has to be covered as well. In that fee process, is that what you're saying? The fee that these individuals would pay would be included in that fee?
Yeah, I think that that's a possibility. One thing that I think we don't really take into consideration is, you know, a lot of the other businesses that are here on the reservation, you know, we don't charge fees to make sure that the regulatory processes that are in place benefit them as well. You know, right now we're looking at cannabis and saying, well, somebody's going to have to pay, you know, those cannabis growers are going to have to pay like there's some other kind of people, you know, they're just not regular tribal members who are trying to participate in the industry. Now we're saying, well, we need to charge fees to these people. We don't really do that to any other businesses that are operating on the reservation. You know, we don't charge taxes, for instance, but because this is a really seems to be a controversial issue, you know, we're considering a fee schedule. But at some point, the tribal members should be able to individually benefit from, you know, the structure that's in place of the tribe and the infrastructure that's been put in place for a number of years. So I'm not saying I'm against a fee schedule. I'm just saying that if it's not consistent with what we're doing to everybody else, because we don't tax other small businesses for these types of activities through a regulatory process generally. So, but I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I think it will be a part of whatever the consideration is for these commercial scale operations.
Well, I appreciate you guys bringing this forward at a general meeting. I was hoping to see some type of draft regulations that the Tribal Council was going to approve. I know that you've been talking about this at regular council meetings, and that was one of the things that I asked is, when are we going to see something that could be proposed back to the membership? I just want to say that our reservation here and our people have always been using marijuana, but at small portions for their individual self. This here now is going to be commercialized, so I'm just a little worried about that because sure. of our water situation, our land situation, and the environment itself. I'm just a little concerned about that. So are we going to have something? Is that what the council is proposing to the membership now, that we want to do this for individuals, not as the tribe as a whole, but for individuals that are currently growing marijuana and want to prosper their business, but don't want to pay a fee? That's what I'm hearing. Am I wrong?
No, I'm not sure if I maybe understand the question. This is for, there have been individuals who've been interested in cannabis for a long time, and the people, you know, voted to lift the prohibition, Title 34, and as a result of that, the Tribal Council, when that happened, was responsible for actually implementing the referendum. They haven't, and they didn't, and so now there are folks who want to participate, and this isn't just for the people who are currently participating in the industry. This will be for anybody who wants to be a part of that. And I don't think you'll find many of the growers, the current growers, if you will, or the current people operating in the cannabis industry, unwilling to pay. I think people, you know, the really conscious people that I know, and nobody's really opposed to you know, sending some kind of a fee or even allowing people to come take a look at their operations. You know, they're really open to all of these things that are being proposed. Some may want less regulations, and others aren't afraid of having, more broad regulations. As far as the ordinance or the regulations that have been considered so far, the council has gone through a number of different, you know, meetings and kind of looked at some regulations that might be proposed. But so far, we haven't come to an agreement on what we want to propose to the membership. So with having Keith now on board with AIM Law, I think the council is going to sit down and really craft regulations that we can all feel comfortable with, and then make a presentation to the tribal membership at that time.
Okay.
Because currently we don't have something that we could offer that we would say would be complete.
Okay, so this is just the beginning to say, hey, tribal members, this tribe is thinking about doing this, so we want to get some feedback from you. And so this is the time for the membership here to speak up and express your concerns to the tribal council on this issue. Like I said, you know, I don't have, the only issue that I have is our land that we have here and our water that we have here and our resources that we have to regulate this type of business here on the reservation. Okay.
Yeah, and I think now is absolutely the time. You know, if people have questions or comments or things that they'd like to see, you're more than welcome. Yeah, sure, come on up there. And then Lois.
I've done a lot of work on cannabis just because I've watched what is happening on the national, regional, meaning Oregon, Washington, California, or Colorado, and as well as what happens here and as well as in California. And I followed somebody, even the California tribal proposals. And ironically, some of the tribal proposals, California tribal proposals, really do mirror the gaming process. And so I just kind of said, well, that's, and there was a hearing of the Senate Indian Committee as well as the Department of Interior on cannabis in Indian Country, and they even said in their questions for Indian Country is how do states fit in, and so that's this kind of fits right into the model of how California, how national Indian gaming has happened. So I've given this information to the council, and every time I give it to the council. And of course, we had our meeting in July of 2021, and the managers came and expressed some concerns as well about how do we regulate, and you know, does it happen up in the forest land and everything. But unfortunately, we don't know what the proposal is. And when we try to speculate about what it is, we get into fights, right? Now, I'm bad because I'm saying something that somebody else doesn't say. Just trying to follow along, just trying to see what this thing looks like. What's interesting to me is that the documents that I have presented to the tribal council following the national, what's happening in Congress, within the administration, what's happening in Oregon and Washington with tribes is exactly what Keith, not exactly, but has a lot of what Keith talks about. Those were the things that were opposed at HOOPA before. My point is, let's find out what this thing looks like, because we can't speculate and respond to something that we just don't know what it is. Because the commission, for example, Darcy, you're involved with the California HOOPA Gaming Commission. You know that process, right? Are we talking about the same process here? How do we screen licensees and how do we regulate? How do we respond to complaints? Those are all things that have to be described. There's now what Keith talks about here is what happens in California and in the federal, right? What about tribal? We're a tribe, right? We have tribal standards. Will the cannabis be done without regard to HOOPA standards? The answer is no, they can't do that because it will not be accepted by the membership. I want to see what happens here. And I told Keith the other day, I'd like to sit down with him. I even developed a matrix on a regulatory system for HOOPA that would allow us to just eliminate the things we don't want. And the matrix is based on what we see on the outside with what the Oregon and Washington state tribes have agreed to. I'm kind of curious about why Oregon is not identified on this map. Are we just talking about what happened in Washington? Because they have compacts with the state of Washington, and those compacts spell out how the regulatory systems will work. So anyway, I'm interested in seeing this. I'm definitely not going away. I'm not going away because of those tribal members have told me they have concerns. We're HOOPA people, right? No matter how this comes out, we're all going to be here, right? And so and we better figure out how to bring ourselves together. And if we don't, it's not going to be cannabis versus non-cannabis and HOOPA. It's going to be whether or not it just simply gets voted down or voted up, because if in fact it is an negative environmental impact that includes the river and different things, it's just not going to be accepted. So we need to walk down this path and see where it comes out and how the structure is set up to do it. I told Keith the other day that I appreciate his outside perspective of how it's done in California, but as well as other places as well. I think this is a positive step forward. I think he can be a helpful facilitator, but I am also very concerned about how cannabis is going to affect HOOPA people, HOOPA culture, HOOPA protected areas, as well as my property. I'm an Indian living on my mom's trust allotment. I want to make sure that we have safeguards and we're not dividing ourselves to the point where we have to fight each other.
Thanks, Danny. Clarence?
So just recently, I saw an article that was published by the California Appellate Court, and that was October 29th, just a couple of weeks ago. And their finding actually says, no matter how much California voters and the legislature might try, cannabis cultivation and transportation are illegal in California. As long as it remains illegal and as long as it's illegal under federal law. Okay, so that's just new information. And I don't know if Mr. Anderson has evaluated how this affects tribal cultivation. And this case is J.C. Crandall versus the County of Santa Barbara. And it specifically has to do with transportation of a product from a grower to a dispensary over property easements, okay? So, and just recently, Humboldt County Planning Commission is reviewing now on whether they're going to continue to renew permits, cultivation permits, and if they're going to add any more new permits. So the four or five permits on the reservation right now, they may not have a permit. Okay, so I understand that that Cole Wilkinson memorandum has jurisdiction. The state doesn't have jurisdiction. But how do we transport a HOOPA product from the reservation to the dispensaries? Because we don't have a big enough market here locally on the reservation. So as soon as we go across the reservation line, state of California says it's illegal to transport. So that's one thing you got to consider. That's what the appellate court in state of California says, and it's some of the legal people that have reviewed this that I've talked with. They don't think that the California Supreme Court will take this case. So this appellate court ruling is going to pretty much stand. So California permits that are allowed, like through Humboldt County, they may come to an end. You may not see those permits. And that's what the cultivators that have Humboldt County permits, they are going to be affected, okay? And just a little bit of background too on, you know, because, you know, the Cole Wilkinson requirements, those eight that are listed in the handout, it's costly. I've followed cannabis cultivation now for close to 15 years and participated in Humboldt County's discussions to arrive at their ordinances, their policy. And right now, Humboldt County is in a deficit of $1 million. They cannot enforce their regulations over the broad permit system that they have. They do very little inspection. And of cannabis cultivation. I don't know if the county actually sends an inspector out to the reservation here. And we don't know if the cultivators are in compliance with the county ordinance requirements. The county doesn't have the money to enforce their regulation. It looks good on paper. It looks good on this handout, too. But you've got to come up with a plan on how you're going to regulate. If you move forward with this industry, you've got to regulate. And about 10 years ago, the tribal council asked some of the community members here in Hoopa to set on a commission to come up with commercial fishing regulations. That process included a group of people of interest, you know, fishermen. I think there was one councilman. Anyway, it was a good exercise, and then we brought it to this room here for the public to review and make comments as we progressed with designing these regulations. And I would like to see the tribal council to set up a similar kind of body so that it includes the community, not just amongst yourself and, you know, at your tables. I'd like to see the community involved, and then that body will bring it to the larger community over two or three public meetings that will have a record for you to consider, and then you can start putting dollar signs to what it's going to cost, what it's going to cost the Hoopa people, because you don't have the money. You don't have a grant to regulate. It's going to come from the dollars that you generate from timber receipts. So that's our money as tribal members. And there, like Steve pointed out earlier, there are guidelines there that you have to follow. So you have a limit on how much money you can actually spend to regulate this. Like I said, Humboldt County, even though they charge some real high fees for these permits, and they've waived some of those, they're in a deficit of $11 million. Can we, the Hoopa people, afford to subsidize the cultivation project here? Can we afford it? So, thank you.
Thanks, Clarence. I think I would defer to Keith maybe to answer some of the legal questions he brought up. I forget the case. I would just point out that the county, it was like 2017 or 2018, somewhere around then, when Supervisor Sundberg was there. They adopted, I don't know if it was a new or if it was a revised cannabis ordinance for the county. And at that time, the reference to Indian tribes would be that the tribe has sole jurisdiction to regulate cannabis on our land. So the county, they don't come in and do much of anything anymore in regards to cannabis. But I would ask maybe Keith to answer the transportation question as far as the legality of that.
Yeah. I'm happy to. It's a good question, you know, and I'll go back to, you know, when we first started at Santa Isabel, I want to be clear on something. You know, we were never doing anything in the shadows. We were right out in the open. You know, when we set up our operations, we actually invited the Department of Justice, FBI, local law enforcement, county board of supervisors. They all came down. We gave them tours of our operations and stuff. So I mentioned that just to make sure everybody knows that at the locations I've worked with, like Moortown, like Enterprise, which is just about to start up, to Chancy, Santa Isabel, our transportation is not secret. We're doing it in the open because we're confident about the regulations we put in place. And how we transport in a way that's legally cognizable is it starts right at the beginning. When either a clone or a seed comes to the reservation, you know, the person who brings those materials, they are licensed and backgrounded. So we know exactly who it is who brought those materials. Those materials, and let's just use cannabis flower as an example, you know, when that plant goes in the ground, it's tagged and it's recorded in an inventory control system. And so as the plant matures and as it's harvested and it's packaged up into flower, you know, every stage in that process is documented in that inventory control plan. At the end of that process, the plant is then sent for a lab analysis to make sure that it is, you know, safe for human consumption. And it requires a certificate of analysis that meets certain regulatory guidelines. Assuming that the plant has met the threshold levels, or I should say, does not hit the threshold levels, and passes the certificate of analysis, at that point when the plant, or in this case the flower, is ready for transportation, the individuals who are driving, you know, transporting the product, everybody in the vehicle, they're going to be licensed, backgrounded, and vetted as well, you know, as is obviously the grower. What that means is that every single person in the chain of commerce before the product has left the reservation has all been backgrounded and vetted by the commission. And the commission will also know exactly where that plant came from and what steps were taken to put it on the truck. At that point, the truck will have a manifest which documents exactly where it's going, the delivery method, et cetera, et cetera. And those manifests have been legally recognized by state troopers in California on numerous occasions. We have had drivers pulled over by police officers who say, "What are you doing?" And we show them the manifest, we explain who we are, that we're licensed by a particular tribe, that we're going to a certain tribe, and we show them that manifest. And they look it all over and they say, "Okay, you know, we see what this is, go about your business." Now, that's not to say that trucks have not been seized with cannabis, but those are the people who are kind of in the black and or gray market. The products that go from Santa Isabel, DVJ to Chansey, you know, that's done through a highly regulated process that has the backup, the transparency, all the things that are being looked at. As people in the audience probably know, tribal sovereign immunity extends beyond the reservation. But frankly, I don't even think that's why these transportation routes are recognized. I think the real reason is because of the professionalism, because you're looking at the accountability, the transparency, the licensing, the background, and the vetting that demonstrates that this is a regulated product. And that's why these products are able to go from reservation to reservation. It's something we've been doing for, 6 or 7 years, and done so with a great deal of success, but it's because of the diligence. It's the work, you know, the work that goes into it. The tribes that I've worked with, the regulations put in place, we don't mess around.
Thanks, Keith. I did want to point out, too, Clarence, that, you know, soon as we get a regulation established, we hope to share that with the membership through a series of different meetings. I know there's a tremendous amount of interest in the cannabis industry, and certainly, you know, the concerns that people have, we're going to do whatever we can to address those and craft a regulation that is all-encompassing, but at the same time be able, you know, make it able for people who want to participate to be able to have an opportunity as well and not have it sort of over-regulated. But we intend to have an open public process for the approval of the entire regulations or the ordinance. Go ahead, Lois.
Thank you, Lois Risling. I would encourage you to look at our current ordinances. As you are aware, Danny, there are 10 commerce ordinances that we operate under. And in one of those ordinances, and I don't know exactly which one it is, it says that you can't charge any fees or taxes for any local business, tribal business, that has employees. If they don't have employees, then you can charge fees or taxes. I would suppose that commerce regulation would have an impact on any regulation that we would write for cannabis if we were going to charge a fee or we were going to charge, i.e. a tax or something. So we need to look at our current ordinances because I think there are problems between the two, just what I'm projecting would be written in this. And I support Clarence's recommendation of having what I would term an ad hoc committee that's chaired by at least one council member that's going to be here. Or you could have, from your presentation, Ryan, I get the understanding there's, or maybe it was Danny's, there's a difference of opinion about cannabis among the council, so maybe two chairs, one for, one opposed, and appoint people who have some direct knowledge and some people who might have some community knowledge that could be talked about it. That would work with Mr. Anderson so that they could bounce ideas off of him. And I'll give you an example of that. I was on that commission for commercial fishing. There, I made a recommendation to the commission. I said, absolutely no alcohol. You can't drink a beer while you're fishing. And all the fishermen in the room just looked at me like, when was the last time you said a net, Lois? Well, when I did it, I wasn't drinking. So we went round and round. No, that failed. That recommendation, but it was a discussion that came up that was important. One of the things Danny chastised the land use plan people that were working on that was with using an outside consultant, and he said using an outside consultant was a bad idea, one from Albuquerque, because they don't know HOOPA. I don't know where Mr. Anderson lives, but I'll bet it's not HOOPA. So that's one of the reasons you might want to have an ad hoc committee supporting Danny's position. So I would really encourage that and to have various points of view on that committee. The good thing about an ad hoc committee, they're not passing policy, they're reviewing policy, and they can raise questions that then Mr. Anderson can take back to the council for discussion. And the other thing I'm hoping is that we take a very broad-based approach to this. Yes, it's for individuals and helping economic development and small business, but we don't want to exclude the tribe from doing business in some capacity, because there's many capacities. If individuals are doing this and there is a case that comes up for, regarding distribution or if the law changes, it needs to be clear that those individuals are responsible for what they do, not the council and not the tribe. They're not the ones that are going to be paying for that. And that needs to be reviewed, and it needs to be either in the history of the regulation or in the regulation itself. Ordinances, as you know, can be approved either by the council or can be set out for vote of the membership. Vote of the membership is very difficult, and we try to avoid that as much as possible, but sometimes that is a consideration as well as an ordinance that can go through the council. So I really encourage you to have Mr. Anderson, when the ordinance is written, do a projected costs budget for the council to know. To manage this is going to cost this much. To fund a commission, because that's what's in the PowerPoint, a commission is going to cost this much. It's going to cost this much to make sure that this is a functional ordinance that can be implemented. And you can only do that with a projected budget, and that, I think, should come from your consultant with when the ordinance is presented to you for your decision-making. Thank you.
Thanks, Lois.
Chairman, if it's okay, I thought Two excellent points were made, and I'd like to just touch on them if I could.
Sure.
Yeah, so, you know, I forget exactly how many sets of regs I've put together, 10 or 11 probably, but I've also been asked to come in and fix other people's regs, and I will tell you that one of the biggest mistakes that I see people make is they try to take some tribe's ordinance or some tribe's regulations and just plop them into another tribe. And it's the worst mistake that can be made. So there were some comments about, like, basically saying, like, you need to understand how HOOPA operates. I couldn't agree more. Every tribe has its own constitution, its own existing laws, its own customs, its own traditions. And if you don't spend the time to understand how the tribe currently operates, it's a recipe for disaster. And I'm speaking firsthand from seeing the quote-unquote recipes that were disastrous. So I really appreciated those comments because I think too often, too many people think that, oh, it's tribal cannabis. So we just take somebody else's laws, plug and play, and we're good to go. It's really a much more complicated and much more nuanced process. So I really appreciated the comments.
Go ahead, Ellie.
I know everyone's cold and wants to go home, so I'll try to keep it short. I'll start with water. I think there's a misconception that cannabis cultivation will affect the amount of water that we use in HOOPA. Right now, I see egregious waste of water, especially irrigation water. I see people leave their irrigation standpipes, which are 2 inches thick, wide open, all day long, 24 hours a day, with zero regulation, no quantification of that water, and no regulation of that water's use. Our water, our irrigation water, is coming from tributaries, our cold water tributaries that are spawning habitat for coho and Chinook salmon, as well as lamprey. So when we have irrigation standpipes going full blast or even at a trickle, that water is leaving our creeks, which in essence is leaving the river. So our creeks, our tributaries, provide cold water refuge for our migratory species that rely on cold water during August, September when it's hot. And that's when you see those spigots wide open. So if we really care about water, what are we doing about it today, right now, with our antiquated irrigation systems that pop leaks daily? People don't understand how to use their irrigation, so they leave it wide open 24 hours a day, oftentimes drowning out certain areas or encouraging invasive species growth. So along our fence lines, where our irrigation lines are, you see what? Blackberries, because we're watering them all summer long, all fall long. I see cannabis cultivators as some of the most water-wise farmers that we have in HOOPA. They're not drowning their plants. They're using drip systems, because if you drown your plants, you get root rot, you get other diseases, you get mold. I just don't see cannabis. I don't like hearing that cannabis is used or water is a reason to be anti-cannabis. And I'm not weighing in on pro or anti-cannabis. I'm saying, as far as water's going, we're just wasting it, like, with no regard today and yesterday and for the past 20-something years. So we have plans, and we have plans that are underway. Ag plan, Linnea and PUD are working on an irrigation plan. There's a climate plan and the forest management plan. Let's change the way we use water in those. And if there are cannabis regulations, I mean, we need to implement some sort of language within those regulations that we follow the plans. Let's create a water-wise pledge. So all of our cultivators in HOOPA, whether they're farming cannabis or tomatoes or corn or food or cattle, can take a water-wise pledge. And, you know, that's using water responsibly. So we can say we're farming responsibly, no matter what the crop is. Let me think. I had some main points about water, and I have messy notes. Oh, another reason to fight for the 50,000 acre feet sooner than later, because we have available to us 50,000 acre feet of water that we could be supplementing. Right now, when we take irrigation water, that's fisheries restoration water that we're consuming without regard. 50,000 acre feet would be in addition to the fisheries restoration flows that currently flow down the river. So let's get to 50,000 acre feet. Let's quantify the water. Let's create some responsible education for people who are, or some education so folks who are using the water can be more responsible with it. Let's see. The cartel grows. Those are going to continue whether we have legalized cannabis or not. Those are the folks that are destroying the forest. Those are the folks that are diverting streams. Those are the folks that are using rodenticides. It's not the our neighbor who's growing 20 plants in their yard. Those aren't the folks that we need to worry about. Those are the folks that we're, in essence, blocking from accessing the industry by not allowing them to formalize their business. So my main points were about water. Thanks.
Thank you, Ellie.
Thanks, Ellie. Go ahead, Kim.
Kimmers, Hoopa Tribal member and submitted nurse, forest nursery manager. I was hoping today to come here and see your guys' regulations, because I thought that's what you were, said you were going to have for us at the last meeting when we talked about the cannabis. So I'm a little sad that I don't have that to be able to actually speak towards the regulations that you guys are presenting, because you guys didn't bring us anything yet. Just a presentation of what should be on there. But so I'm only going to speak on like the concerns and what I hope you guys include in your regulations. Ali brought up water. Yes, water is a big part of it. One plant takes about, 480 gallons of water per growing season. Just to be able to grow it, it's averages about, 1 gallon per pound of processed flour. So that does take a lot of water. And if you take that into consideration of how many people do you plan on letting to grow? Do you guys have an idea yet on like how many cannabis farms we're going to have in the valley?
We haven't set any limits up or down.
Okay. So
we don't have
the only just way to be able to actually do these regulations and to allow for growing as a small business is to have no limit, right? Every single tribal member should be allowed to be able to grow commercially if the tribe is going to allow tribal members to grow commercially. I can't even imagine having 25 grows in the valley, no matter how small. It's just going to be like overwhelmingly stinky. It's going to be a detriment on our resources, of our natural resources for water. The amount of fertilizer that's needed, even if it is organic, per plant is about, 1 cup per 5 gallons. You times that by however many 480 is divided. I don't know, you guys can do the math on that. That is a lot of fertilizer putting into our ground. And yeah, you can go differently and do hydroponics or indoor, but from what the AIM guy is saying is that the big thing is for sun-grown, which means in the ground, sun, out in the sun, grown marijuana is the want and the need. That's the driving product for this whole idea. And so there is no way to be able to justly regulate this cannabis growing. I know there might not be even 25 tribal members that want to grow commercially, but just still, you can't say only this many people are allowed to do it. That's not fair for the rest of our tribal membership to allow only certain people to be able to grow. You're going to make a lot of people mad with that. And I know this isn't going away and it's not going anywhere. The only recommendation I could say is that we regulations that we put on cannabis isn't for growing commercially. We shouldn't have any growing commercially on the reservation if we care about our land, if we care about an environment, if we care about our water quality, if we care about our kids. Went to the Ghana gathering, right? Gathering of Native Americans. And the first thing that youth video said, what was the first drug she used and was introduced to? Marijuana. Every single one of those kids connected their drug use start to marijuana. Not to say that marijuana is a gateway drug, they've proven that it isn't. But it's just the fact that, like, normalizing it and making it so easy and accessible for our youth, which this will make even easier for them to use, and pushing the idea that our tribe is okay with it. That's normalizing, like, we're okay with it. We're okay with you guys going, this is an industry. We want you to be drug dealers because that'll help you be successful in life. That is the message that it's sending. And I don't want that for our kids. I don't want that for our youth. Because then it leads to them running around homeless, stealing from people because they went on to do other drugs because they need other vices to, you know, feel better about their lives. But neither here nor there on that. I do have no problem with people utilizing marijuana and being, you know, a smoker recreationally or medicinally. I have family members who utilize it medicinally because of their depression and it helps with them. I have family members who utilized it for their cancer that helped them feel better. I have no problem with that. So if you're going to regulate it, my suggestion would be let people grow it if they want to grow it for their own personal use. But own personal use marijuana, you don't need any more than 2 to 3 plants a year. How much does a commercial grow need to grow to be able to produce product for selling? Do you guys know? I know you guys know. How many plants does a grow need to make or grow a year for commercial selling to be considered successful? Ryan, Joe?
Maybe enough to provide for your family.
How many plants?
I mean, it's really subjective. You know, you can, I mean, if you really want to get into it or you have the time to get into it, it could be 6, it could be 12, it could be 1,000. I mean, you know, if you're growing light deprivation, if you're growing indoor, if you're growing sun-grown, I mean, it's just a whole bunch of different methods of cultivating marijuana. So, I mean,
it's more than,
if you're trying to put us as a gotcha-ish question, I mean.
No, I'm just, so it's more than 3 plants. It's definitely way more than 3 plants to be able to grow enough.
I mean, this year I saw some pretty gigantic plants grown on the valley. So,
and so if
there were 2, that were,
and if you need it and you want to smoke it,
tables out here.
And you know, you don't need to like go out and buy it. You can do it on your own at home and grow enough for yourself or even your family members who utilize it with you. And that should be enough, a couple plants in your home. I know people who grow 1 plant in their garage enough to cover them their entire year, and they smoke a lot. I mean, they really do smoke a lot because it's only a couple plants and it's good enough. We don't need that kind of disastrous environment, destructive grows in our valley. There's no money in it. The cost of a startup, you know, you can Google it. Google's awesome. The cost of an average startup for somebody to start growing is about $325 to $650 per square foot for indoor growing, about $80 to $200 per square foot for outdoor grow. That's just a startup cost. And then there's maintaining that cost yearly. How many people in this valley could even handle a startup cost? Not many. And I know this is why you said, that's why we need it, because we need to be able to have this, you know, this economic growth. But if they can't even start up correctly, and then on top of that, we're going to impose all these fees on them as growers, it just really doesn't make it fair to the entire tribal membership. And so if you can't make it fair to the entire tribal membership to be able to grow commercially and prosper, it shouldn't be done. But what can be done that is fair and even for the entire tribal membership, make it illegal for commercial growing, go ahead and make it legal to allow everybody to grow for their own personal use, limiting it, how many plants they're allowed to grow. That's my recommendation on this when you're creating all these regulations that we have yet to see.
Yeah, go ahead, Danny.
Frankly, I'm glad that the last proposal we fought about at the council meeting is not on the table. Because since then, we've all had a chance to look at that, and a number of issues have been raised. I'm glad it's not on the table, because it's very different from what Keith presented. I have my position on cannabis, and I won't even go into that. I think we just need to find out what the real deal is. And so I think that if we want, Keith is hired, let's just walk through a process of figuring this out. And let's put it on the table, and it's either going to fit together or it's not. The cost associated with it, it's either going to fit together or it's not. And so I think we just need, for everybody, whether you support marijuana or not, I think we just need to know what we're talking about, and so that we can all be talking about the same thing, and we can put our own interpretations on what it is. Right now, there's just way too much speculation about what it is, and because the next part of this as well, which I will hear it probably when I get home, what about the elders that have medical marijuana? Are we talking about them or not? So let's just figure this out and put a proposal on the table and have some discussions about it and see where the ends meet and go from there. But speculate, as we've seen since, I don't know, years ago, speculating about what this is not helpful, because we just don't know what it is. None of us know what it is right now. So anyway, I think we ought to just move forward, get a document on the table so we can all talk about it.
Go ahead, Penny.
A couple of things came to mind just, you know, listening to the presentation. And I have relatives in Covelo when they opened it up, and they had outside companies come in lease from the tribal members and grew there. And so how are you guys going to control that if something like that happens here? Once they know that you guys are opening this up for tribal members to grow, either commercially or for personal, how are you going to monitor all of that? And then just kind of like what Lois was saying, it's going to cost the tribe money, because somebody's going to have to go out and do site compliance on all of these growers. So that's just the two things that came to mind.
Yeah, I would say, we haven't quite, again, gotten to what a regulation is going to look like. I know that we've talked about limitations on non-tribal members specifically, so I think that would maybe tie into what you're talking about as far as people coming from off the reservation, participating in the industry here on the reservation, and then the costs associated with that, the regulatory process. We haven't really gotten into much of that either. I just want to point out too also what Danny was talking about. I think that the tribal council is really trying to be respectful of people's want to actually participate in the discussion about whatever regulations are going to be coming. We've tried to go down a process or go through a process that, you know, step by step has been open, you know, it's been public, you know, it's allowed for more opportunities for discussion or comments or questions or concerns, whatever that may be. And today is just another example that we're trying to give some a look at kind of where we are, how ultimately the tribal council got to this place, you know, as far as the cannabis in Indian country, cannabis in California, and now cannabis in Hoopa. So we don't want to really get into a situation where we just, you know, I know Danny says, just put something on the table and let's just talk about it. Well, we really don't want to do that. You know, we don't think that that's the right way to go about doing it. We feel like that, you know, there should be some kind of a thoughtful process to the way in which regulations are going to be crafted, considering the I guess controversial nature of what's going on here. So we really want to be thoughtful in the way that these regulations are proposed, and you know, just throwing something on the table is not really what we've even tried to do. There have been a number of different conversations that have come up where the council has been involved in that, and again, even like to what Danny had said, you know, he's glad that that didn't get proposed. Well, it didn't get proposed for a reason. You know, the tribal council wasn't in favor of that and isn't something that we wanted to do. He wanted a different crack at it. So if we were to throw that on the table, I don't think that that would actually be very helpful. So, anyhow.